What's better than one John?
Here's Johnny.
Nobody really knows. That's why we put two of them together. This is Canzano and Wilner,
a.k.a. John and John.
Welcome to another edition of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. We got a lot to talk about involving Las Vegas, maybe a little bit of coaching hot seat talk and more. I'm John Canzano. You can read my work at johncanzano.com. Get a paid subscription, get a free subscription. Whatever works for you works for me. John Wilner's here, Bay Area News Group. You can find his work at pac12hotline.com. John Wilner, I'm back from Vegas. It was from the women's tournament and about to head in a return trip for the men's tournament as we record this. But
what was the scene like?
It was good. I mean, it was vibrant. You know what hit me? The women's Pac-12 tournament, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with women's basketball in the Pac-12. And frankly, when you look at the the fact that after the Pac-12 network got on the scene, you know, this conference averaged like 5.5, almost 6 NCAA tournament berths per year on the women's side. The Pac-12 tournament, the Pac-12 network, women's college basketball, I mean, it was just great. Juju Watkins, Cameron Brink, Stanford, USC, Oregon State's good. There's four or five teams in the Pac-12 that you really could see getting to the Elite Eight and making a dent in the NCAA tournament bracket.
There, it's almost like Pac-12 women's basketball should continue to exist along with everything else. If you're talking about making football independent, right? I mean, and having all the other sports compete on regional levels. I mean, yeah, it does. It's a really good product, and it's too bad it's going away. And what did you get? Was there any kind of haul over the proceedings?
Yes. And I kept coming up as I talked to like Cameron Brink's mom about it. And, you know, she was saying, gosh, this has been such a great conference. And the coaches were talking about it. And, you know, the administrators certainly that were there to help put the tournament on were kind of talking about how sad it was to see the end of it, because there was a real buzz around it. And especially when you got down to like the semifinal round, those teams are all really good. Every possession felt big. It felt like, you know, deep into March Madness. That kind of atmosphere and intensity. A lot of Oregon State fans in particular showed up. I think they, you know, I would estimate there were about 3,500 Oregon State fans in the building. It felt like, you know, how the Arizona fans take over the men's tournament. The Oregon State fans showed up for the women's tournament. And, you know, I popped over to the WCC tournament just to kind of compare the atmospheres and see what is Washington State and Oregon State walking into next year. And there was more buzz at the women's tournament. It was just, it felt higher profile. It felt bigger. Part of it is Stanford, USC had a lot of eyeballs on them.
Yeah, it won't be quite, I wouldn't think it'll be quite the same for the men, you know, because the product is not as good, but we'll see, right? I mean, you know, they'll get, they'll have a good crowd. Arizona, folks from LA will be there for Friday night if one of the LA schools makes it through. But the trajectory of Pac-12 women's basketball and Pac-12 men's basketball over the last 8 or 10 years, very, very different. And both of them can be traced to some degree to the Pac-12 networks, which had the opposite effect on men's basketball and football, right? It was great for women's basketball, not so good for the two major money-making sports.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I started asking questions of the Pac-12 about, you know, the network and then the berths. And, you know, in the 5 years prior to the Pac-12 network, the women of the Pac-12 had an average of about 2.6 NCAA tournament participants per year. So about 2.5 teams a year would make it. After the Pac-12 network comes on the scene, they never got fewer than 4, and they averaged almost 6. They had 7 twice, Wilner. And so that network, you know, you can't say it's the only reason because there was coaching, there was other investment, but that network really appears to have helped the women's basketball programs. Why do you think that is specifically?
Well, because they could recruit to it, right? I mean, all the good players on the West Coast, the schools could say to the families, the schools can say to the families, you're going to be able to watch your kid play if they come to the Pac-12. That was a big, that was a great recruiting pitch. Meanwhile, in men's basketball, it's like, well, you're comparing the Pac-12 network distribution to what it would have been like on ESPN or Fox, and it's not good, right? I mean, it was a step up for visibility for women's basketball and a step down for visibility for men's basketball.
Yeah, I can remember the, you know, when in the last few years of the football program saw that their team was on the Pac-12 network, they groaned about it, but didn't seem to be the case over at the women's tournament. We'll get to the men's tournament in a second. I'm curious to see what you think is going to happen, but I popped over to the WCC, Wilner, and I talked to Stu Jackson, the commissioner of the WCC. I talked to some athletic directors while I was over at their tournament at Orleans Arena. They've got one more year where they have to be at Orleans Arena. I suspect they're going to try to bounce that WCC tournament maybe to T-Mobile, maybe to MGM Grand Garden Arena. I don't know. You know, they have one more year at that place. But they were asking me a lot of questions about what Oregon State and Washington State might be up to and how that might impact the WCC. And I want to just bounce something off you. Is it possible that, you know, if there's no chaos and Oregon State and Washington State really do have to rebuild, is it possible in your mind that they could try to do football in a rebuild on the football side and then maybe either just join the WCC in basketball or try to fashion some conference that includes the best of the WCC in basketball? I mean, some of the people at the WCC were talking about that, asking about that, bantering about it.
So you're thinking it would be like a Pac-8 in football and a Pac-12 in basketball or something like that?
Something like that. And I'm just wondering how financially does that come together? From a competitive standpoint, does it come together? And, you know, Stu Jackson, the WCC commissioner, made a comment to me, you know, I said, well, yeah, your universities all have such great history together. And he looked at me and he said, as we have seen, when push comes to shove, people will do what's best for themselves. And so I think they're, you know, it's not like he's concerned, but he's got his eyes open. He's kind of, I think, watching to see what's going to happen.
Well, part of it depends on what Gonzaga wants to do. And, you know, is there really a path for them into the Big 12? I've always been skeptical about that. I just don't know that the money is there. Enough money is there for the football-playing members of the Big 12 to agree to do it. So if that path is blocked for Gonzaga, then, you know, could you have a Pac-12 for hoops? Maybe you could. It might work. But we also got to see what happens with the Mountain West, right? Because if Washington State and Oregon State rebuild the Pac-12 with anywhere from 6 to 8 to all of the Mountain West schools, then are they also going to take a couple of WCC schools? I don't know that worked. To me, it's like, if you're looking at the WCC, it's Gonzaga or nothing from a, you know, from a valuation standpoint.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking, you know, obviously St. Mary's had a great year, but do they bring media value to the table? No, not in the same way that Gonzaga does. And I agree with you. I think if Gonzaga could go on their own to the Big 12 or somewhere else, I think it already would have happened, right?
I would agree with that, yeah. I think that Brett Yormark has made his pitch. I mean, he, you know, he's a Big 12 commissioner, and he sees value in college basketball that a lot of other folks aren't sure exists. And he has been, you know, trying to make the case for Gonzaga in the Big 12. And I'm not sure that he's got enough schools that are buying it, right? Because it's gotta be worthwhile to the others. You can't bring Gonzaga in and have everybody else get less revenue. So Gonzaga has gotta at least pay for itself at a level that will allow the other schools to continue to make, what is it, $31 million a year in media money. I'm not sure that the math really works. And certainly it's not great timing. I mean, Gonzaga's playing well now, but, you know, it would at least feel a little different if they were a top five program like they have been so often. The fact that they have taken a step back a little bit, I think that timing is not good for them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another thing that came up at the WCC tournament, I was watching a game in which Pepperdine coach Lorenzo Romar was coaching, and everybody knew he was fired. Washington's going into the Pac-12 tournament kind of with that same thing, with Mike Hopkins. Everyone knows he's done, and Washington will be moving in another direction. And I asked a couple of the ADs, I said, why are schools doing this? And they said, Wayne Tinkle, Oregon State, that there's some apprehension among athletic directors. You know they want to go in a different direction. There's some apprehension to let these guys coach the conference tournament without telling them ahead of time, hey, this is it. This is your swan song. What do you make of that?
Well, so wait, how does that relate to Tinkle?
With just that, that's what Oregon State did a few years ago with Tinkle. Like, Scott Barnes presumably was winding up, getting ready to part ways with him, and then Oregon State went on that Elite Eight run kind of out of nowhere, and Tinkle got five more years on his contract because the athletic director was kind of boxed into the corner.
But did they tell Tinkle ahead of time that that was going to be it?
No, but that was kind of the presumption, was they were just waiting for Oregon State to get knocked out of the conference tournament.
Right.
They're going to be a first round exit, right? And then Tinkle was going to be, sent on his way. And so Oregon State instead let him coach it, and he ends up winning the conference tournament. He ends up going to the Elite Eight. Barnes has got no other choice, really. Got a gun to his head with the boosters. He's got to extend Tinkle now, and he gives him five more years. And it's been, five relatively unproductive years. And so the thinking being that the ADs at Pepperdine and Washington and some other places are now going, I'm not going to let this happen. We're going to tell them now that this is it. We're parting ways. And, hey, whatever you do here in this conference tournament, it's gravy for you, but this is it.
So if Washington ends up in the Elite Eight, Mike Hopkins is still fired.
Do you think so? Saying. I think he is. Yeah.
You'd say that'll never happen, but we also said that about Oregon State, too. I mean, that whole thing hinged on one free throw. I believe it was a missed free throw by UCLA. Sent that game into overtime. Oregon State won it. Tinkle gets those 5 years. Oregon State is in a tough spot, all because of a free throw. It's crazy how that kind of stuff happens. And I think that we're going to have, we already know Hopkins is being dismissed. I think by the end of the week, we'll have at least one, maybe two more Pac-12 coaches, is my guess. I mean, I think Jared Haas is in big trouble at Stanford. In fact, some of the greatest players in school history have come out publicly and said they need to make a coaching change. I would think that, when Stanford loses, there'll be a decision there. I don't know others. Bobby Hurley probably safe. They don't have an athletic director. He just came off of an NCAA tournament last year. He's probably in okay shape. You don't think Tinkle's going to get dismissed because they got too much money?
$8.7 million. $8.7 million is just too much for them right now. And here's the other thing, Wilner. You tell me. Oregon State just got $10 million from the Oregon State legislature. They got $10 earmarked for athletic scholarships. It's unprecedented. $10 million. There's some people in the state of Oregon upset about it. I just cannot see Oregon State buying out Wayne Tinkle, paying him $8.7 million after getting that $10 million from the state and having the optics of that look like, hey, we just got money to buy out our coach.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I still would love to know why he got five more years, right? I mean, his agent really earned his money. There's no doubt about that. Why don't you extend him by 3 years, even four? That was, they are in a real tough spot.
I can remember that.
Did you see that Dana Altman is refuting any reports or hints that he might retire?
He is, but I also know what he told me. He told me he would coach as long as he felt like he was the right guy, or until they told him that, basically it was time to leave. Now, I have been told that he wants to coach another year. He has, multiple years left on his contract. He told reporters that he's not going anywhere. He's not retiring. I still think let's watch this tournament and let's see how his season ends. Let's see what kind of mood he's in at the end, because we've seen him now, this would be 3 years in a row, going to the NIT. It's not the goal at Oregon. And so I don't know if Oregon's on the same page as Dana Altman is, but I still think he left some talent out there. He didn't do the job that others have done in the portal. He's going to have to embrace it. I'm told he's got his arms open, to the portal now, but let's see what happens.
Well, he did such a great job with transfers before the portal was a thing. It's interesting that he's not maximizing the opportunity. You know, that used to be one of his greatest strengths, was he would take a bunch of transfers like Chris Duarte and other guys and kind of mix and match them and get them assimilated and have them playing really well by the end of the season. So it's interesting that he hasn't fully embraced the portal like some other guys. Speaking of, like Kyle Smith, right? I mean, there's a talk about another coaching change. I think that he's probably in line to get some pretty good offers from around the country. Washington State's going to have to ante up to keep him. We'll see how much, what kind of deal the Cougars can put on the table. I think he makes $1.5 million now. You'd have to think doubling his salary is the bare minimum it's going to require. But I think there's going to be a lot of activity on the coaching carousel here in the next couple weeks.
Well, back to Altman real quick. I mean, I had one of these PhDs who looks at data and stats, crunch numbers on Oregon's injuries this season. And he looked at top eight players in the rotation, and Oregon has missed, the top eight players in their rotation have missed almost 50 games. It's number one in the country. By the way, Colorado's second, and they're not close. It's about half as many. So Altman's had injuries. So some of it is the portal. Some of it is he just can't keep guys healthy, and it's been 3 years of this. And so I just kind of wonder at what point he's frustrated with kind of how things are going. So I do think it's important. Like, Oregon's going to get, obviously an opportunity to win a game in this tournament, but I just think it's really important for him to get a W. He'll get probably UCLA, Oregon State in the opening round, and Oregon gets the winner. But after that, he'd be matched up against presumably USC or Arizona. I think it's really important that Oregon wins at least one game in this tournament for Dana Altman. And you're right about Kyle Smith, but I think he's going to get offers, and I think it's about more than money for Kyle Smith. I think the money's nice, the security's nice, but he's already done the WCC thing. I can't see him wanting or being enthusiastic about going back to playing WCC teams, next season as Washington State's coach. So I kind of think he's gone. I think this will be a swan song for him, and I think he's going to get offers. And Stanford may come after him. I think he could probably do better at this point, but I think he's going to get some offers, and I would expect Kyle Smith leaves Washington State.
I would too, and it will be interesting to see if he just moves across the state, right? I mean, would Washington consider hiring him? They should probably think about it. It's also, to me, intriguing to cast all these moves and decisions against the conferences that the schools will be in next season and the outlook that the administrations, the presidents and athletic directors have for the trajectory of their programs as they're entering these new leagues. The schools going in the Big 12, that's a hard league, right? That is a real hard league. Whereas the Big 10, there's an opportunity there for Washington and Oregon. I think it's not, and I wrote something about this today, Big Ten basketball is not Big Ten football, right? There is no version of, there's no basketball versions of Ohio State and Michigan. So there's an opportunity there for Washington or Oregon or even USC to really compete on a regular basis in that conference.
USC seems to have found something, and, they were injured early in the year, and they, you and I both think that they are going to play in the championship game in this Pac-12 tournament. I have them getting by Arizona. I have them playing Washington State in the final. I think, who do you have them playing in the final?
I picked them to play and lose to Colorado. Colorado's my pick to win it.
Oh, you got Colorado winning. I have Washington State beating USC. So we both have them both getting to the, both of us have USC getting to the title game, but you're right. I mean, look, I think for those schools going off to the Big Ten, nobody's talking about men's basketball, but you're right. There's opportunity there. I think, Washington's talked about Washington fans have talked about Utah State coach Danny Sprinkle being a guy. He's the Mountain West Conference Coach of the Year, being a guy maybe that you bring in. I think Dana Altman, if he is the Oregon coach when they go off to the Big Ten, I think he's got to just wrap his arms around the portal and hope that the Division Street, the NIL Collective, does the same thing, because outside of Infali Dante and Jackson Shellstad and a couple of other players, Cousinard comes to mind, but outside of those guys, Oregon's roster just isn't that impressive. And I think it's a personnel thing. And you're right about, before the portal was a thing, Dana Altman, he had eight or nine transfers on that roster, and he was doing it before it was cool. And now that it's sort of an open market, he's taken a step back. It's just really weird to kind of watch that.
Do you want to go game by game for the men's tournament here?
Let's do it.
Yes. All right. What do we got? The opener is, what is that? USC against Washington?
Yep, 12 o'clock. USC, Washington. I think USC wins that game. Although Washington's got guys. USC, I think, is just playing really well right now.
Yeah, how will Washington's guys perform with knowing that Hopkins is done when the season ends? I think they like him, so they could muster the effort needed for an upset. But I think SC is playing so well. I picked SC to finish second back in October. I looked at what they had coming back, and Isaiah Collier so good, and it seems like they are finally getting it figured out. And they are a very dangerous team for that side of the bracket.
Plus, this tournament needs LeBron to show up, and Lakers have a couple of off days there on Thursday and Friday.
So good NBA schedule knowledge.
I expect to see that happen, but I just like the way the trend is your friend. Matchups matter, but USC, you're right. They've just played so much better down the stretch. They've been great. You look at their last three. They beat Washington at Washington. They beat Arizona. Those are, that shows me you can win this game. And so I like USC to win. I think it's always a wild card, though, when you have a coach in there and, are the kids playing for him? Are they not playing for him? I think we'll find out how much Washington's players like Mike Hopkins at noon in that first game. Second game, 2:30, UCLA, the 5 seed against 12 seed Oregon State. Two programs, really, that are made for each other. Mick Cronin blaming his players. It's never his fault. Meanwhile, Oregon State just has found a number of ways to look bad this season. Some of their losses are really bad losses, blowout losses. I have a feeling that Oregon's going to be scouting that game because they'll get the winner. And I think Oregon's just going to be sitting back going, okay, who in the heck's going to emerge from that game? Who do you like in the UCLA-Oregon State game?
Yeah, I think that's the first team to 40 will win. I think it's going to be ugly. UCLA has had trouble scoring all year, but they're good defensively, so they'll make it hard for Oregon State. I think that this needs to be an R-rated game. It's going to be brutal. I like UCLA, but again, I really do think it could end up being 53-49.
I just don't like that Mick Cronin, he recruited those guys, Wilner. Now he's saying they're not any good. Like, what are we talking about? You're just saying you didn't recruit well. I've never before had to tell players to shoot so frequently. I think both of those teams are stumbling to the end of the season. UCLA has just been so up and down, losing, winning. I thought for a stretch they were turned around, and just doesn't look like they are. Moving on, Cal Stanford, the 7:10 game, 6 o'clock. Love what Mark Madsen's done at Cal. I think Stanford has to be kicking itself.
Well, a lot of people are. There's no doubt. I don't know if the athletic director at Bernard Muir is kicking himself for not firing Jared Haas last spring and then hiring Madsen, one of the best players in school history. Instead, you sit tight with Haas and you allow Madsen to go to Cal and reinvigorate your rival. Not a good situation there. A lot of Stanford fans and former players are very frustrated. My guess is that as soon as Stanford loses this week, assuming Stanford loses at some point, that will be it, and there'll be a coaching change. But they've got good players. They've underachieved.
Did you see what Cal just did? Why we were recording this podcast?
No, what'd Cal do?
Cal just announced that Mark Madsen has signed a contract extension through 2029, 2030.
There you go. Good for Cal. Getting ahead of it.
Yeah.
Cal has won the game. Because I have the contract that just became void. His buyout was such that it would have been hard for him to go to Stanford. I think it was going to be $5 million for a buyout. But smart of Cal to lock him up. There's no doubt about that.
Cal wins again. Moving on. Nightcap. Utah, Arizona State. Utah's super interesting to me. I think they need a couple of wins to be a tournament team. They're one of those teams that I think could play their way into the NCAA tournament. They're going to get Arizona State. Arizona State's a mess. They had a player quit to go play in the Dominican League. Really disappointed with Arizona State and Bobby Hurley this season, but I like Utah a whole bunch in that game. They should advance. They'll get Colorado in the second round.
I've actually got ASU. ASU swept the season series, and I just think that this is one of those matchup deals. It's not good for Utah, so I picked ASU, but, it's certainly a toss of the coin here. The difference in the seeds is not indicative of the difference in the quality of the teams, and Utah has really struggled to win away from home. I think they've got one road win in conference play at UCLA, and they probably got to win the tournament to get in the NCAAs. They have really staggered here these last couple weeks.
Jerry Palm yesterday told me that he thought they were on the bubble. He thought if they could get two wins, they would make it real hard on the committee. But Brandon Carlson's status is up in the air for Utah, and you're right about how inconsistent they've been. I think they're tough, though, and I just don't like the dynamic at Arizona State when you've got Jose Perez, a starting guard on your team, quitting just before the final regular season game, going to the Dominican League and suiting up for Plaza Valeria and scoring 8 points in his first game. And then Bobby Hurley would be mad. And then he came out and he told reporters, hey, you got to do what's best for you. That's kind of the world we live in.
That's kind of a Bobby Hurley thing to say, right? Looking at it from the player standpoint, former player himself. But I certainly agree that it's a bad look, and it's reason to wonder what's going on down there. That's a toss-up.
Arizona would conceivably get USC on Thursday in our bracket the way we have it. I got USC beating Arizona in that game. I think, Arizona knows it's in the tournament. The last time out, USC got them. I think you agree with that. I think we both have USC advancing to the quarterfinals, the semifinals on Friday.
I do. I think USC's got really good players, and Arizona is very good, but has lost a bunch of games in a mediocre conference. That's, you got to keep the big picture in mind. The Pac-12 is not a good league, and Arizona, would they end up 15-5, 16-4? I don't even remember this point. But they've certainly, they lost by double digits to SC the other day, so I picked SC. They are playing very well, and they are a tough matchup for Arizona. They got guys who can defend. They've got length and versatility, and this is the time of year when talent shines, and Isaiah Collier is a big-time player. So I picked SC.
In the other quarterfinal on Thursday, UCLA, we both have them advancing out of the first round, would take on Oregon, be 4-seed versus 5-seed. I think Oregon wins that game. I think they've been sitting and waiting. I'll give Dana Altman that one. I think Oregon gets to the semifinal against USC. How about you?
Yeah, I do too. That is going to be a desperate game, right? Because both Oregon and UCLA came into the season expecting to end up in the NCAA tournament. And now the only way to do that for both is to win the Pac-12. So two teams that are going to be real desperate, and I expect that to be a rock fight. But I picked Oregon as well.
Cal, I have Cal over Stanford, so it would be Cal Washington State in the other quarterfinal. Washington State's got some injury concerns, but I like their length. I like their size. Kyle Smith's a good coach. I'll take the Cougs over Cal. How about you?
I picked Stanford to beat Cal, and Stanford, they beat them last week. I just think Stanford has got, they've got good players, and you just don't know it by looking at them play on a regular basis. I picked Stanford to beat Cal and to beat Washington State. So I wanted to pick an upset or two. I just don't think I'm kind of anti picking chalk all the way through. So it's like, well, what are the upsets?
And, too many upsets.
I settled on USC and Stanford as my two kind of early round upset picks.
I'm going to have 2-seed Washington State and 9-seed USC in the final. That's as upsetty as I need to be.
That's good. That works. That works.
So we disagree on Utah-Arizona State, but the winner of that game is going to play Colorado. Can either Arizona State or Utah? Yeah, no. Okay. So it's Colorado.
Do you think?
No, I think Colorado's good. And Colorado's thing is they're streaky. Like, on any given game, they look like the best team in the conference.
They do. And I think they're going to get Cody Williams back, and he's a lottery pick at some point this year or next year. They've got one of the best guards. I just think they're well-coached. They've got experience. They can score from a bunch of different positions. They can play half-court game. They've got an elite point guard who can bail them out of trouble, KJ Simpson. I think that they are just very, very solid. And I think they're going to smoke, whether it's ASU or Utah, they're gonna whack them.
I agree that they whack them, but then I think they run into Washington State. I'm just staying on the Cougs on this one. I like them to get to the championship. You like Colorado in the championship. We both like USC on the top of that bracket to get by Oregon and get to the championship.
Yep.
I think it's going to be fun.
Well, and if one of the LA schools or Arizona gets in, you would think that the semifinals Friday evening, and then the finals would have a pretty good atmosphere, right? I mean, it's easy for folks to drive from LA on Saturday morning to get there in time for the tip-off. So that, you know, that would be, it'd be nice for the conference to have the final men's basketball tournament, the final men's basketball event under the conference banner be something that folks want to see and has a good atmosphere.
Yeah, and I think, look, on my radio show, I had a church pastor on who's driving from Pullman to Vegas. So, you know, I think there's going to be some fans. And I heard it on the women's tournament. I heard fans say, I waited a number of years. I didn't come see this. I wanted to see it before, you know, it was a done deal. And so I think there's going to be some rubbernecking going on with people who go, hey, why not go? It's the last time that these teams are going to be in the together in this kind of tournament setting, unless the conference gets put back together in a basketball sense someday. So I think there's some nostalgia to it as well. Make sure you read me at johnconzano.com. You can read John Wilner at Pac-12Hotline.com. We'll be back with another episode. Make sure you subscribe as well. We love doing these episodes. If you're subscribed, you won't miss a thing.
Thanks very much, everyone. We will be back next week, and there will be a lot to talk about.